your response. For them all in no business. I hold them can't walk up in my pants. Step up in my shoes. It's tomorrow morning. No, no, you're that funny news. I know for them get fixed and them all confused.
Need your help. You're there. When your kids say something's wrong, you're there. When your friends have a rough day, you're there. Be there for yourself the way you're there for others, as it's normal for these uncertain times to bring out negative emotions or anxiety. If you're finding it difficult to carry out daily tasks, there are solutions. Visit quebec.ca/gettingbetter or call Info Social 811. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere des Prairies Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
CKUT Radio.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
Vision Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Yes, rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Number, you weren't a name, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just?
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Yasmin, and I'll be your host for today. We would like to acknowledge that CKUT is located on unceded Haudenosaunee, Anishinaabeg, Abenaki, and Mohawk territories. The Kanyakehaka Nation is recognized as the custodians of the lands and waters on which we gather today. Jajaki, Montreal, is historically known as a gathering place for many First Nations. Today, it is home to a diverse population of Indigenous and other peoples. We respect the continued connections with the past, present, and future in our ongoing relationships with Indigenous and other peoples in the Montreal community. Today, we will be featuring the second part of an interview with the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project. The first part of the interview aired on our last show on Friday, November 27th, at 11 a.m., and you can find it because we are now a podcast. Prison Radio Show is a podcast, and you can find our Prison Radio Show podcast anywhere where you get your podcasts. But first up, we have some news and announcements. The Jail Accountability and Information Line, JAIL, takes calls from people imprisoned at the Ottawa Carleton Detention Center, the OCDC, and their loved ones on weekdays from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Since its launch on the 10th of December 2018, the JAIL hotline has taken more than 5,000 calls from prisoners at OCDC. The JAIL hotline works with callers to address the human rights issues they face at the Ottawa jail, including grossly inadequate medical care and diet, denial of religious rights, and lack of affordable communication with loved ones. It also connects callers to community supports and services to facilitate their safe release from jail custody. In addition to jail oversight and community reentry work, the JAIL hotline supports prisoner-led campaigns and events to reduce the use of harms and prisons of imprisonment. At OCDC. In December 2020, the responsive grant from the Law Foundation of Ontario will end, and they currently use this funding to cover their phone bills as well as to pay staff who coordinate the hotline's call intake and resolution work. It costs approximately $5,000 per month to operate the JAIL hotline, and they are seeking donations to maintain the initiative for the coming year. By donating to this funding campaign, you will be directly contributing to the JAIL hotline's capacity to A, employ staff and pay operational costs incurred as part of documenting and raising awareness of the human rights and reentry issues faced by prisoners at the OCDC, as well as B, organize with people imprisoned to impact change at Ottawa's jail. And they thank you in advance for your support. You can find the link to the GoFundMe page by going to cp-ep.org and clicking on the Donate Now button for the GoFundMe page. Next up, we have an announcement from the Justice for Solly movement. On December 15th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Justice for Solly movement will be hosting a national virtual vigil. We have invited a diverse set of speakers, including academics, artists, medical and legal experts, and individuals with lived experience, spiritual leaders, and clearly amazing human beings. And just to name a few, there's Elle Jones, who's a spoken word poet, an educator, a journalist, and a community activist. Senator Kim Pate, who's been doing work to end the carceral system for a long time, decades. Ifra Youssef, who's the co-chair of the Justice for Abdi Rahman Coalition. Bianca Savard Lafreniere, a carceral lawyer. Vicky Stone, who is Stephen Duthie's sister. And in case you don't know who Stephen Duthie is, his case is a story about a man who was suffering from mental illness, left alone in the freezing cold with a pair of moldy shoes and 3 pennies in an envelope. Also speaking will be Harsha Walia, the executive director of the British Columbia Civil Liberties Association, Imam Yassin Dwyer, who was Canada's first and only full-time prison imam for almost 12 years, Judy Struthers, the mother of Justin Struthers, who on December 25th, 2017, tragically lost his life in a cold cell at the Elgin Middlesex Detention Center. And every week since Boxing Day 2017, Justin's mother has been demonstrating outside the EMDC. And Angela Voss, Jordan Sheard's mother. Jordan, who was 26 years old when he was sent to jail for his safety and died there within hours. And that happened very recently. They will share their unique perspectives on a variety of topics. Everyone will find something for themselves. And the message from them is, let's stand together in solidarity for those who have lost their lives to the demoralized criminal justice system. And you can RSVP via Zoom, and you can find the link for the RSVP on the Justice for Solly Facebook page and their Twitter page as well. So it says, do not miss the 4th annual vigil. Stay strong, stay safe, be the change that makes this world better. See you there. Hashtag Justice for Solly. And just to give you information, we've been carrying the story about Salman Fikiri for quite some time. We've had several interviews with his brother, Yusuf Fikiri, going quite in depth into what happened, into the tragic events where Salman Fikiri was essentially killed by prison guards. So Salman Fikiri died while temporarily housed at an Ontario correctional facility on December 15, 2016. Next piece of news comes to us from Democracy Now! From today. That's Thursday, December 10th. You can find the information at Democracy Now! On Democracy Now!'s website. So President Trump has sent 8 people to their deaths so far this year, breaking a 17-year hiatus in federal executions and plans to execute 5 more people in the final weeks of his administration. On December 10th, International Human Rights Day, the federal government is scheduled to kill Brandon Bernard, a black man who was 18 years old when he was convicted as an accomplice to the murder of a young white couple in Texas. Bernard did not kill either person and says he was the getaway driver during a robbery gone wrong. Citing moral reasons and new evidence, 5 of the 9 surviving jurors have changed their minds, and the former assistant U.S. attorney who helped secure his death sentence is calling for his execution to be halted. It is very rare that you have 5 of the 9 surviving jurors saying that they would like to see clemency in this case, says Liliana Segura, a criminal justice reporter for The Intercept, who has covered this case extensively. So you could also go to The Intercept, just type Brandon Bernard, and you can find more information there. Brandon Bernard's death sentence hinges on evidence that has been called into significant question. So go to democracynow.org for more information, or you can go to The Intercept as well. And if you can also check out Brandon's Instagram. So that's instagram.com/helpsavebrandon. Brandon Bernard was sentenced to death for a crime committed in 1999. So he was only 18 years old. And it explains on his Instagram, similar to the Democracy Now! Story, that as an accomplice, he did not have a leading role in the crime, and he has demonstrated positive behavior throughout his 20 years of incarceration, even reaching out to others and counseling them not to follow in his path. When critical charging and sentencing decisions were made in his case, both the government and the jurors had an incomplete picture of Brandon and the offense. And like we said, 5 of the 9 jurors that are surviving no longer believe that a death sentence is necessary for Brandon. And one of Brandon's former prosecutors who worked to uphold the sentence now wants his life to be spared. So Brandon Bernard was sentenced to death in June 2000 when he was still a teenager. We need to save Brandon and get him off death row. How to help? So visit at helpsavebrandon.com and fill out a pre-written letter to Trump. Reach out to your elected officials and demand that they speak up to save Brandon's life. And there's only a few hours left from now until when this is awful, heinous, unthinkable crime of killing someone is going to take place, apparently tomorrow. So reach out to your elected officials and demand that they speak up to save Brandon's life. And you can find local reps, senators, and more here at commoncause.org/find-your-representative. That's for if there's listeners in the United States. For others, you could also call the Department of Justice and leave a message at 202-353-1555 and choose option 9. And you can find a script if you go to at Help Save Brandon. It basically reads out hello, and then you say your name, and you say where you're calling from, and that you're calling on behalf of Brandon Bernard, who is an inmate on federal death row, and that you're asking to commute Brandon's unjust death sentence of life without parole. Brandon does not deserve to be executed. No one does. Thank you. And you can also go to hashtag abolish the death penalty. So reach out to these folks. Reach out to everyone you know and ask them to get involved and call and send messages to try to save Brandon's life by moving him off of death row. Next up is an announcement from Black and Pink. Black and Pink is a national organization fighting alongside incarcerated LGBTQI+ folks and people living with HIV/AIDS. So their call out is that they're holding their annual holiday card campaign this year, and Black and Pink would like to make sure each of their nearly 21,000 inside members receive holiday love from at least 2 community members. The link to sign up is featured on blackandpink.org, and you can go there for more information. You can also go to blackandpinkpenpals.org/card-campaign. So it's caring for members during this often difficult time. They send holiday cards, which help to bring moments of joy, connection, and community, and serve to send a clear message to correctional staff and other incarcerated folks that people on the outside are watching out for and care for their inside family. You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. Our next piece of news comes to us via the John Howard Society of Canada's Twitter account, and they're reporting numbers from the CSE, the Correctional Services of Canada. The COVID-19 infection data shows, as of December 7th, the second wave has infected 151 prisoners, 127 of those at Stony Mountain, and it looks like the Canadian infection rate is about 0.6%, while federal prison infection rate is now about 3.6%. So that's 511 people out of 14,000. And you can find more information if you go to their Twitter account. So that's the John Howard Society of Canada. Our next piece of news was posted on December 2nd at the Let's Talk Jails. That's the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project's Twitter account. And they are urgently calling on the City of Toronto to impose a moratorium on the encampment evictions, and they recognize that community bonds are critical for individual and community safety. And the statement, it's Toronto Prisoners Rights Project public statement against encampment evictions. And it's to the Mayor John Tory, Mary Ann Bedard, and Janie Romoff. So the TPRP is a grassroots organization of formerly incarcerated people with loved ones inside prisons, frontline workers, artists, researchers, educators, and students. We are committed to prison abolition, advocating for the rights of criminalized incarcerated populations, and advancing public education about the violence of imprisonment. We recognize that we are on the traditional territories of the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Haudenosaunee, the Anishinaabe, on Treaty 13 lands, which are also subject to the Dish With One Spoon treaties. Indigenous peoples should not be displaced from their land, as we are committed to working alongside and taking direction from the original caretakers of this land in all of our calls for justice and freedom. We loudly join the call for the city to place a moratorium on encampment evictions. Our vision for a world without prisons and other carceral settings is focused on a transformative justice and community care. We recognize how imperative community bonds are for both individual and community safety and well-being, and believe that communities can keep each other safe without relying on policing and prisons. We know that the city's plan to evict those living in encampments will sever vital community ties and weaken networks of care. People will be separated from their families, jobs, friends, and social services and overdose prevention sites. Our vision for a carceral-free future also recognizes the need for direct government investment in community members' well-being. We call on the city to use the resources allocated for the displacement campaign to provide encampment residents with basic survival gear and access to sanitation until safe permanent housing is available for all. Rather than celebrate the efforts between neighbors to assist each other, such as Khalil Severite's creation of tiny shelters, the City of Toronto has chosen to respond maliciously. We call on the city to work collaboratively with community members to meet the needs of encampment residents instead of responding punitively. We know that abolition does not stop with the elimination of prisons and jails. We recognize that the prison industrial complex takes root and collaborates with all institutions here in Turtle Island. We are aligned with the Encampment Support Network, ESN, to advocate for the right of all people to self-determination and work toward eliminating barriers that prevent people from participating fully in our communities. The ability to choose where you live should not be a privilege that is only afforded to certain people. As such, the TPRP echoes ESN's assertion that people are experts on their own needs and have the right to choose where they live. We also recognize that encampments are a direct result of a housing policy failures by all levels of government. For example, in 2019, a housing regulation in Ontario was amended, allowing landlords to reject Toronto community housing applications based on an applicant's criminal record. It is unconscionable to deny anyone housing based on criminal history, a construct that serves only to uphold the legacy of white supremacy and colonialism that defines capitalist society. We stand with ESN to say that policy failures cannot be solved by clearing encampments. Rather, the city must choose to invest in affordable housing accessible to those who would depend on it. We also know that for subsidized housing, waitlists extend over a decade long, highlighting how challenging it can be for community members to access accommodations that matches their needs. TPRP calls on the city to immediately halt encampment evictions and create a plan to redevelop policies and funding decisions concerning housing in Toronto to meet all residents' needs adequately. The TPRP recognizes encampment residents as our friends and neighbors and understands that the City of Toronto's choice to evict unhoused people from their community is a form of violence. We are calling for an end to encampment evictions as a part of a broader movement towards guaranteeing safety, community, and self-determination for all. And you can find this at their Twitter account at Let's Talk Jails. We'll take a short musical break, And we'll be back with our interview with the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project members, Rejan and Rosa.
Voy a repetir una vez más en este tema las causas más antiguas que originan el problema. No voy a mencionar que hace casi dos siglos atrás Chile firmó un papel legal que estableció la paz y la frontera. Será que ya me parece obvio, pero no voy a indicar que aquí nadie puede robar lo que les propio. No voy a insistir que fueron nuestras estas tierras desde antes que existiera su nación y su bandera. Espera, no voy a pedirle al olmo, por eso yo no voy a dirigirme a los que hoy levantan polvo. Todo lo que dije hasta ahora callaré y en silencio guardaré todo lo que toque fondo. Son dos décadas desde que desperté. Muchos dicen que muchos de mí se parecen a usted. No les voy a recordar que hubo masacre, tampoco inculpar a sus abuelos, porque mi pueblo pasó hambre, sangre. Yo vengo a mostrarle, yo no pretendo convencerlo de portarse un poco más amable. Lo intentamos antes, ya durante mucho tiempo, pero yo no vengo a reclamarle ningún parlamento. Siento que todo argumento queda corto ante siglo y medio de violento y sistemático despojo. No hablaré de genocidio, tampoco del zoológico que allá en París esclavizó a los indios. No le contaré mi sueño, donde mis hijos estrecharon la mano del que mataron en un crucifijo. Y que al bajarlo pa' que no sufriera más, él dijo, Inche Kilapana, Mulepetain, Weichan.
Cuando la palabra ha sido traicionada, es tiempo de callar y escuchar en silencio. Solo obedezco la verdad que me regalan el río, el viento y todo mi ancestro. Cuando el atropello marca mi destino, asumo mi camino ya que no queda otro modo. Y con el compromiso de este paso decidido, lo que no voy a decir ya lo dice todo.
Voy a defender mi integridad y mi inocencia. Usted ya decidió que soy culpable mucho antes de mi audiencia. No vengo a mostrar evidencia, tampoco a aclarar que hablar mi propia lengua. Lengua no es señal de ninguna demencia. Me juzgan por la prensa y no es sorpresa que apenas me apresan, pesan sobre mí las más pesadas sentencias. Pese a esta realidad, no voy a reiterar que en territorio ancestral su tribunal no tiene competencia. No explicaré mi resistencia y no diré quién fue que echó a correr el ciclo de violencia. Yo estoy acá si usted quisiera conversar, pero no vine a suplicar migajas de sobrevivencia. Llévese su paz de motosierra y quédese con su antifaz de honestidad y su arsenal de guerra. Cierre sus ojos ante la historia, mi ruca en llamas, mi tío quemado, grabados en mi memoria. No lloraré por mis reclamos ignorados cuando el Estado se hizo a un lado. Por ese homicidio no hubo juicio ni hubo condenados, porque llamarse Luxinger no es lo mismo que llamarse coñonao. No le contaré de los temores acumulados, de helicópteros, balines, amenazas y sueños frustrados. Y aunque en mi view que los llevo grabados, hoy no pronunciaré los nombres de mis peñas asesinados.
Cuando la palabra ha sido traicionada, es tiempo de callar y escuchar en silencio. Solo obedezco la verdad que me regalan el río, el viento y todo mi ancestro. Cuando el atropello marca mi destino, asumo mi camino ya que no queda otro modo. Y con el compromiso de este paso decidido, lo que no voy a decir ya lo dice
el otro. El Estado de Chile me reprime, me sigue la pista y está a la vista ya que su misma naturaleza es racista. Yo no soy terrorista, me tienen odio solo porque yo me opongo a vivir de un modo capitalista, porque no creo que los ríos son nuestros recursos, sino que seres vivos que deben seguir su curso, porque no saco de la tierra sin pedir y siempre trato de retribuirle todo lo que uso. Por eso es que yo asusto al empresariado, porque mi Dios no es el dinero y no obedezco a su mercado. Me ofenden cuando dejo descansar la tierra, no ven que en este gesto muestro respeto y no flojera. Las grandes forestales no lo entienden, no les importa destruirlo todo por los troncos que ellos venden. No ven que la vida es un ciclo, que el daño que ellos siembran hoy y mañana lo cosecharán sus propios hijos. Lo mismo pasa con el trato entre personas, la comunidad se apoya y todas las zonas una sola voz. Lo que le afecta a uno afecta a los demás del love, por eso los defiendo. Aunque los pacos digan mátenlos. Los niños viven el presente y su futuro crece con su conocimiento de su ambiente. Y esto es parte de un timón profundo, donde ayudar a los demás es siempre lo más natural del mundo, donde la palabra tiene valor y peso, porque
que no se compren y con millones de pesos. Por decir todo esto y no ponerme un precio. ¿Quieren meterme preso? Háganlo ya, yo estoy confeso.
Cuando la palabra ha sido traicionada, es tiempo de callar y escuchar en silencio. Solo obedezco la verdad que me regalan el río, el viento y todo mi ancestro. Cuando el atropello marca mi destino, asumo mi camino ya que no queda otro modo. Y con el compromiso de este paso decidido, lo que no voy a decir ya lo dice todo. 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 Devuelva la tierra. Devuelva la tierra.
Cuando nosotros luchamos por cuidar los bosques, por cuidar los ríos, por cuidar la madre tierra, es la lucha de ustedes y es la lucha nuestra. Es la lucha de todo hombre, de toda mujer, de todo niño que tenga un espíritu libre y un espíritu amante con los seres vivos de la naturaleza.
That was Subverso featuring Portavoz with Lo que no voy a decir, translated as What I'm not going to say. Next up is the second half of our interview with the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project members Rejan and Rosa to discuss the critical work that they are doing to support those on the inside in various ways, from hotlines for prisoners to support funds and to imagine abolition in real and practical ways, and to fight against the prison industrial complex and police by creating networks of self and community care made up of therapists, traditional Indigenous ways of healing, and sharing skills for folks to do self-care based on dialectical behavior therapy and much more. To talk about I know that you had an event, and I mentioned it just a second ago, that you organized in June called We Keep Each Other Safe, a community forum to organize alternatives to policing. Like, could you speak about this event and what the outcomes of it were and sort of like how this fits into, you know, the goals? I know, you have an abolitionist organization, and that makes a lot of sense to be looking at these alternatives. So if you could just sort of highlight maybe some of the outcomes or next steps, or just talk, you could talk about also how the event got, what the inspiration was for it.
Yeah. When Regis Kurczynski Paquette's story came out, we were devastated, for a family to be put in a position where they feel like there's no other resources or opportunities but to call the police for help, and then for those police to then contribute to the death of their loved ones, is a story that we have heard so many times. But for thinking of folks like Andrew Loku, or just so many, Jazz Chowdhury, so many folks who are Black, Indigenous people of color, whose own communities don't have the resources or skills or opportunities to be able to offer the kind of care that they know that person needs and deserves. They turn to police in an act of desperation or an act of need. And in almost all cases, those situations end up worse off than before they were called. Direct action is really important for us. We've seen the movements, the sort of inspiring movements of people like Black Lives Matter, really make clear what our demands are around community safety. We've called on political leaders of all stripes to stand up and to offer a better way forward. And have seen all of these quote-unquote elected people sort of disregard the crisis that is police violence. And so one of the things that we know, you know, looking at folks like the Black Panther Party, looking at things like the Bear Clan Patrol, there are community groups that are stepping up and offering support to their communities in place of where police would often be called. And so we wanted to start first by bringing people together. We know that it's not on the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project to put something together like that. But we know that already we have a community around us. We work with a lot of different organizations that have an imagination that is way more colorful than the imagination that has designed the police. So we started that conversation with the community forum. We had so many people participate in a discussion around their needs, around what it would look like, around what we could offer, what kind of skills we could bring together. In our sort of following discussions, we know that one of the things that folks really want to do, rather than having, I think right now, the conversation in Toronto at least, is like, what other group of mental health workers or social workers can we employ to parachute into communities to then be emergency respondents? And I think, I'm not gonna like wholly criticize that approach, but I also think that, you know, I'm somebody who studies social work, and we know social workers can be violent. We've already seen some of the groups that they've contracted to take on this work are very police friendly. You know, like the conversation is, we don't want to burden police with all these other calls. We want to take off some of the work from them, and, you know, let them focus on the criminals or whatever it is. We don't trust that any elected representatives are going to do us right on this issue. But we do trust each other. We know that we keep each other safe. And so we've started, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we held our first series of community safety workshops. We're talking about suicide intervention. We're talking about mental support for mental health. We're talking about how to support survivors of sexual violence. Yeah, overdose prevention and response. Because we think that if we can create an environment where we can learn together, where we can talk together, where we can strategize together, we can take on that work of keeping our community safe. Right now our like, just after doing the community safety workshops, we've had so many people come out and talk to us about what they're already doing on this front, what they can add to this project, how we can do this work together. And so we're trying to think about how to bring even more people into the fold, because already what is being created, I think, is beautiful and transformative. And we as much as anybody want to be able to pick up the phone and call somebody else right away. We're not there yet, but I think that's the future that we're organizing to. Like, who on your block can you call who's going to come and support you and your family with this issue?
This is so inspiring. This is so, it's just impressive. And for those listeners that are in the GTA, or I don't know if the training's virtual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the trainings are virtual.
So for any of our listeners, so where could they find out? You know, you said you held one 2 weeks ago. When is the next one, and how could people sign up?
So we don't have a definite date for the next series of workshops. The goal is to put together a library on our website. We have 4 workshops to edit right now. The next workshop will be on observing police in our communities. Like, how do we do that work? How do we, collect the information we need to hold police to account? Although we know that the systems already fail us so frequently. So strategizing around exactly what that'll look like and who can come forward and offer skills on that respect to serve different communities, because we know that we all have different interactions with police. All of the webinars, inshallah, which means God willing, will be up on our website by November 20th, which is tomorrow. So check it out.
Okay, listeners, you have a lot to check out online, and they can find them on the Toronto Prisoners Rights Project website or on the Facebook page or both.
Yeah, Yeah, on the, I mean, it'll be on both, on the Facebook page. We'll also post it to Twitter. You won't be able to watch it on Instagram, but we'll have a link to it on our Instagram. One thing that I will say is, while the internet is such a beautiful place to be able to make information accessible for a lot of folks, we know that the internet's not accessible for a lot of folks. And so we've had a lot of people reach out talking about zines and print sort of things that we could do, and outdoor teach-ins, teach-ins in different community spaces, poster campaigns. So right now we're in the stage of having a lot of online resources, but yeah, we're not moving with the intention of only having this sort of learning environment online. We want to have it everywhere you turn, everywhere you go. You can take advantage and learn about some of the things that can keep your community safer. Our work is based in Toronto, but by no means is limited to Toronto. And so, yeah, anything that you want to take from the project or add to the project, there's no ownership here. It's the most liberal Creative Commons.
Oh, that's great. Maybe you could even do, because if you make the workshops, but like people can't access them online, maybe instead of having movies in the park, you could have workshops on the park projected on like big screens or something in the summer once it's warmer, because I know it might be cold now, but there's so much you could do. That sounds amazing. And we'll definitely be checking that out. And maybe we could even air part of them on the radio show. On a future episode, so we can talk about that. I have another question. So this one is specifically for Rajan. So when I saw you speak at an event a little while ago recently, that was to support the 1492 Land Back Lane defenders, the Haudenosaunee land defenders. They were, I think, in court that day. And so there was a rally to support them downtown Tekeranto. And I heard you speak and I was super inspired. You mentioned, I was really like, something that you said really struck me and it's like stayed with me. And I've been very curious. I've been waiting for this moment to ask you. You mentioned that when you visited, you were inspired by the experience you had when you visited 1492 Land Back Lane. And you talked about how, and I don't know if I'm getting this right, but I think you had said something about how you were experiencing abolition there. And I was just wondering if you could elaborate and explain what you meant.
Yeah. I think it's in the imagination, in the stories, in the knowledge of First Nations, Métis, Inuit, Indigenous people here and all over the world that we find abolition. I think one of the things that's important to remember, oftentimes when we talk about prison abolition, it gets positioned as this pie in the sky idea, this sort of out there thinking, but we're not talking about creating something new. We're actually talking about returning to a way of life that existed before colonialism, that existed before the sort of cultural imperialism that has held white supremacy up on a pedestal. And you know, when we were there at, or when I was, yeah, when we were there at Land Back Lane, they're doing that work. You know, everybody was welcomed into the space. Everyone was fed and taken care of. Everyone was offered something to do and something to participate in. They're literally creating community centers on the land, talking about how to restore the land, teaching folks about the land. And yeah, I think that a sort of fundamental principle of prison abolition needs to be Indigenous sovereignty, and that's entirely what the Land Back movement is about. And so, yeah, we know that the prison industrial complex has particularly targeted and gone after Indigenous communities. And so, yeah, I think that what's been happening for me in spaces like the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project and spaces like 1492 Land Back Lane, I've moved from sort of seeking abolition to knowing that there are abolitionist communities that are being created in this moment. We did an event for We Keep Each Other Safe, and L. Jones, who was speaking on the event, sort of very cavalierly, the whole event was the premise of the event was, you know, like, let's imagine our abolitionist future. Like, you know, what does the future look like in which we've already won? And, you know, and sort of reflecting on what that future would look like, L. Jones joked that, you know, we're going to have, you know, abolitionist conferences sponsored by prisons and jails. And, you know, that, you know, like, while we're also seeing our movements take off, that we have to be cognizant that these same institutions that we're looking to dismantle and take apart are going to continue to transform and adapt and try to remain relevant within our communities and within our societies. And I think that for a moment can offer a bleak sort of pause to the work that we're doing, but then I think that it also helps us to reorganize ourselves and reprioritize what's important. When we know that we can see and experience abolition within our communities, then we focus on that work. You know, we don't wait for politicians, we don't wait for police to step down, take a knee and offer up their funding. You know, we do the real transformative work of caring for each other and building communities that are not reliant on police and prisons. And that's what I saw and experienced at 1492 Lambeck Lane, that sort of care that I think is fundamental to where we need to go from here. And so I'm in that space at that rally. I urged everybody to go there and experience that as well. No matter where you're listening from, there are Indigenous people defending the land, defending water, asserting Indigenous sovereignty. And there's a lot to learn from those spaces, and I encourage people to get involved.
Thank you. Do you feel, so since I've been doing a lot of research about the history of policing in this country, the history of the RCMP, and it seems like the beginning of them are both just brought in racist, violent, like they all have roots in racism and in, you know, dominating, controlling populations, whether it's starting with the slave patrols, trying to get and find people who are trying to free themselves labeled as fugitives, because they're runaway slaves, transcending capitalism and transcending the concept of being property. And also in the West, or when the past system was in, you know, in place in Canada, which is basically the apartheid system of not letting Indigenous people leave a reserve without a pass, much similar to the apartheid system, which apartheid system South Africa was actually based on, this one here on ours in the United States. But that's also where the police sort of were formed, and as racist militias, basically going to find Indigenous folks and put them back on their reserve. So I was just wondering, in light of that history, I feel like we're seeing this coming together, this real sort of solidarity and this movement of Indigenous folks that are like men defenders and standing up for their rights, along with Black Lives Matter and a lot of Black folks that are doing the same thing. And I was just wondering if you could comment or reflect on this moment. I feel like I don't think it's unprecedented. I'm sure it has happened in the past, because I can't say I'm a historian, but I feel like there's really something really powerful going on, and it seems like it's going on all across the territories from coast to coast. And I was just wondering if both of you could comment on that.
I think it's just a moment of, I mean, like you said, it's not unprecedented, but that solidarity has existed for so long and is like the foundation of so many of the social movements that have been prominent over the past few decades. Like, I think, Rajan mentioned earlier, that guidance for social movements is like the foundation also of the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project, like looking, because Black and Indigenous activists and community members are the ones that are building these abolitionist spaces or these imaginative futures. Like, I think we look to them a lot, and we have to be looking towards their guidance. And I think, people are reflecting on the history of policing and recognizing how rooted and entrenched in white supremacy and colonialism it is, and then recognizing their own ability to challenge that as well. Like, I think a lot of people are seeing themselves as agents of change, and like, they don't have to just wait for someone else to do it. So I think that's also maybe part of why it's been such a huge moment. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm reading Robin Maynard's Policing Black Lives. And we started a reading group within Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project that's going through the book as well. But the one of for your listeners, if you haven't read the book, read it. It's phenomenal. It is just such a wild collection and a detailing of our history of how we've come, for Black folks particularly, from the transatlantic slave trade, in which Canada was definitely implicit and an active participant, to today, in which we see Black and Indigenous people murdered by police or having their lives uprooted through incarceration on an everyday basis. And I think just, I don't want to draw such a strong distinction between Black and Indigenous folks. There's a lot of overlap with different communities. There's a lot of folks that hold both of those identities within their lived experience. Black folks also have, are Indigenous to lands that we've sort of been stolen from and uprooted from. We all are sort of experiencing in very different ways, and sometimes in similar ways, a system rooted in white supremacy that has devalued our lives. I'm speaking as a Black person, but as we're talking specifically about the prison system, we just need to look at who's incarcerated, and in almost every single territory across so-called Canada, is Black and Indigenous people. No amount of representation would be justified, but there's an over-representation of our communities, no matter where we're talking about. And so I think that we have a common struggle, that the sort of aligning of our movements is not unprecedented, as both of you have mentioned, but I think that it is entirely necessary. As I've been doing this work, it's been clear to me that there's a lot of learning that I need to do about the experiences of Indigenous people, the contributions and the teachings of Indigenous people. I've met a lot of Indigenous people who have shared very similar sort of report backs of needing to learn about Black folks and sort of our histories on this land and our history in relation to this land. And I think that, a lot of people are taking on that work. They're learning from each other. And we have really responsible movements like Black Lives Matter Toronto, like Not Another Black Life, like the land defenders that we're seeing come up across the country under several banners that are making that very explicit connection, that are showing up for each other, that are making that that line very clear for all of us. I think that it has become, and in part because of the internet, in part because all of these stories are so available, it's become very easy for us to make those connections and to show up for each other and to demonstrate our solidarity and support for each other.
Thanks. So I just have one last question. I know that we're a bit over time, so if it's okay, I'll ask one more question, and then you can give our listeners more info about where to find you online again. So just the last one, what does abolition look like to you, and how can we best work towards it? I know it's a huge question. I know you're doing it with the work, but if there's a way that either both of you could articulate an answer to that, that would be amazing.
It's a big question, so I will maybe just look at like a small part of it.
Sure.
I think what we've tried, or I guess it's looking at the intersection of the carceral system with everything and like every other part of our lives, and not as a separate entity. And so looking at the way that, the medical system is inherently carceral in a lot of ways. And then how do we change that? And I think for me, it's founded in care and it's rooted in like love. And that is so powerful about abolition. So much of the writing and the thinking has been about how do we value human life and like look at, we don't just disappear people, we like include them and we, yeah, I think, sorry, I'm kind of rambling, but that kind of work is like very much what abolition looks like to me, is just like changing our perspective from erasing people or forgetting about them to like remembering everything and yeah, including everyone and yeah, just providing food and shelter and care, which seems so basic, but that's something that we're still fighting for. And, you know, so housing is, you know, providing housing is part of abolition. Yeah, that's my answer.
Thanks.
Yeah. One thing that I'm referring back to, I sort of in the beginning of the pandemic started reading Until We're Free, which is Black Lives Matter Toronto's sort of reflections on their work. And there's a piece in there by L. Jones and Randolph Riley, and it ends with L. posing a question to Randolph about what is justice. And I can't perfectly sort of summarize it or reference it. I'm not that good of an academic to be able to pull those kind of quotes out. So I would encourage folks to get that book, to read that particular chapter, because I think it summarizes how I feel. And I think, you know, like when we're talking about abolition, we're talking about a community in which we feel safe and a community in which we feel seen and represented and heard, in which we know the people around us, the communities that are around us, what's going on for them. And yeah, like I'm really excited about having children and bringing some kids into this world, and like with an abolitionist community around myself, I'm really excited about what those kids' experiences will be, you know, in being able to grow up and be their full self and feel secure and feel taken care of, or yeah, I think that abolition is inevitable. It's here. It's coming. It's happening in community centers and churches and neighborhood groups and in online forums and, you know, all of these sort of niche spaces that we've carved out for ourselves to be able to feel seen, be heard, feel safe amidst this very toxic and dangerous and unsafe culture that we're all sort of navigating.
Thank you so much. This has been such, I've gained so much and our listeners are going to gain so much. This is great. So many important insights and just like, it's really beautiful just talking with both of you about abolition and your views on it and the vision of what's happening now and how you're working towards it. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us at Prison Radio Show. I just wanted to make sure that if there's any announcements you have or if there's anything that you want to get out to our listeners on the inside and on the outside to let them know, let it be heard now, and be sure to put your website info out as well.
Yeah. I think for prisoners on the inside, we love you. Like, we're here. You know, we understand that incarceration is closer for some of us than it is for others, but we know that none of us are safe in the system, and so we're here. We're going to continue to be here. You're definitely not stopping, especially when the cameras turn away from our issues and stop talking about Black lives or stop talking about prisoners. We will continue to move and demand justice. Check us out on all social media platforms at Toronto Prisoners Rights Project. You know, get involved. There's, you know, more than 100 people who are participating in this movement sort of actively. What I love about an abolitionist space is we're not trying to turn anybody away. If you want to do this work, like, there's a space for you, there's a home for you. We will move as quickly or as slowly as we need to make sure that you can find a home here.
Thanks. And Rosa, do you have any last words? Is there anything you want to add to those on the inside or those on the outside?
Yeah, we'll echo what Rajan said to people inside, that we are here. I think that's the best way to encapsulate that sentiment. We love you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us at Prison Radio Show.
Yeah, also, we love the Prism Radio Show. Y'all are awesome. Yeah. Make sure to include this in the recording.
Yeah, and any upcoming workshops and stuff, we can announce them as well. Like, I've been trying to do that. So we will keep doing that and making sure that we get more and more people to be part of this community, because it's beautiful and it's here and it's happening and needs to happen. So thank you so much for helping create that and keep fostering that in the community inside and supporting those inside and outside. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was the second part of a two-part interview with Rajan and Rosa of the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project. The Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project is a coalition of researchers, law students, frontline workers, and people with lived experience. They engage in public education and mutual aid work to shed light on the harms caused by incarceration and connect incarcerated and recently released populations with legal, community, and financial and health supports. The first part of this inspiring interview, highlighting the important work that Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project does, aired on our last show on Friday, November 27th at 11 a.m. You can find it in the CKUT archives, or you can also find it anywhere where you find your podcasts, because Prison Radio Show is now a podcast. You can also find it on prisonradioshow.libsyn.com. That's L-I-B-S-Y-N. And you can also find our podcast and info about our show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Prison Radio Show. You've been listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. Thanks for tuning in. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Friday, December 25th at 11 a.m. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can also leave us a message on our new listener comment line at 438-337-8423. If you are in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. Thank you for tuning into the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Yasmin, and I've been your host for today. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
Hello, dear listeners. As of March 16th, CKUT studios will be closed until further notice. The programming on our airwaves will consist of a mixture of recent CKUT archives, new pre-recorded segments, and other relevant special programming. Our upcoming funding drive will be postponed until further notice. Thank you for understanding that we are taking these measures to protect the health of our staff and community members. Love, CKUT.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy, recording from home on December 10th, 2020. On tonight's show, my guests include Lisa Rubin, Artistic and Executive Director at The Seagull, on the theater's virtual show Underneath the Lintel this weekend.
You know, in the first few minutes, he's going to say, like, this is it, this is all who can be here. You know, of course, the virtual audience, we hope to have hundreds, but in the actual room, we'll just really be the crew.
Rachel Matumbo, actress and writer, the winner of the Kevin Prize from Infinitheater's Right on Cue competition.
I was actually brushing my teeth. I will not forget because Guy's phone number popped up and I was like, in my head, I was like, I wonder what this is about. And I didn't even like make the connection.
Kathleen Stavert and Joy Ross Jones of Artista. With a meta nod under its belt, the mentorship program looks for aspiring theater artists for its 2021 session.
It can be many different things. It can be, I need to be a part of this program because I need to become an artist and I need that support from the mentors to do that. Or it can be, I can't afford another program elsewhere. This is the program for me because it's free. Or I've just arrived in Montreal and I need to meet people.
But before we begin, a few updates. Last week, the National Arts Center revealed it is sharing the stage with Black Theatre Workshop to launch a new form.